James McGregor. It's November 24th, 2006. He served in the RCAF with the number 6 Squadron as a gunner.
I was paid by the RCAF and I was working with the RAF all the time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Big difference.
Okay.
I was paid twice as much as they were.
Is that right?
Everybody wanted to be my friend.
Right on. Okay, so did you start flying with the RAF first then?
In England, yeah.
Yeah, and when was that?
First flight, let me go on. I'll go back to 1910, Roger. First flight in England would be July the 17th, 1943, the Wellington Bombers.
And this was with the RAF?
Yep. Everything was with the RAF from here on.
Now, when did you join up with the RCAF then? Or with the number 6 Squadron?
Number 6 Group. The 156 Squadron?
Or the number 6 Group, sorry.
8 Group.
What was the 8?
That was number 1 Group.
Number 1 Group?
Yeah, that was 1 Group with the RAF. And then we volunteered for Pathfinders. And after about 3 trips. And then 156 Squadron, I arrived there. It would be around the January, the 11th, if I'm clarifying that.
November 11th?
Eh?
Remembrance Day.
We weren't remembering anything then. We were just reminding the Germans we were going to get out of them.
Right on. So, when did you start your training with the RAF then?
The RAF?
Yeah.
I took my training with the RCAF in Canada.
Oh, sorry, okay.
At Manning Pool, number 3 Manning Pool, number 3 FTS, Flying Training School, and then number 3 Wireless School, and number 3 Bombing and Gunnery School. And then I went to number 3 Debarkation. Station at Halifax.
Okay.
I had 10 cents in my pocket. I'd gone home on leave and somebody wanted to stick my wallet. I found a crack game with 10 cents and I turned it into, I think it was about 78 or 79 cents. Found another one, turned it into $2 and something. Found another one and I came out of that with $200 and something. I got on the SS Andes, going overseas, and the second day out, I was finishing another crack game at $1,300 and some odd. So I took 1,000 of it, and I took it to the purser, and I said, put that in your safe, and don't give it to me if I come at you with a 45-inch hand. Not till we get there. But I probably lost the other 300. So one of the smartest moves I ever made. And I won a lot of crack games.
Sorry.
They were calling me lucky before I ever got in the plane.
Right on. That's a good way to make some money on the side then, right?
Yeah. Well, there was nothing to do.
Yeah.
You posted out in the middle of the prairies with the recreation hall and whatnot and the ball game, but there was nothing to do here. McDonald was, I don't know how far away from the actual town of McDonald, and Port de la Prairie was the nearest town, which was, I don't know, 30, 40 miles away, and nobody had a car, bicycle in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And I started with a wireless air gunner because, in my intimate knowledge, I was thinking when I come home, that this was before teletypes and all that stuff. It was a Morse code we used for communication.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'll come get trained as a more. Morse code operator and did it at dawn and whatnot. When I come home, I'll have a job. But and I said, they want to put me pilot. I said, no, they'll be dozens of pilots available. So I started the wireless course, and but halfway through, word came down from up above that the Manchester bomber was not making a grade. So they hauled it off the line, and they put two more engines on it in a mid-upper turret, called it Lancaster. And it became the most famous bomber of the war.
That's right.
It could carry a single 22,000-pound bomb and take the bomb door off to get that one on.
Yeah.
Long. Tall boy, they call it. So I said, sure, who wants to go straight gunner? Forget about the wireless. And four of us said that. Said, I would, Dolan. And then we were called to the CO's office, and they said, your request to go straight AG is granted. However, you're going to stay here until your class graduates. What's the rush for gunners then if you're going to haul a stunt like that? And right there, my admiration for administrators sank to minus 25. And I remember sweeping the snow off hockey rinks in the open air. The guys like Dawowski and all those National Hockey League players that were in the Air Force playing for the Air Force team.
Right.
And I'd be out there sweeping the rink for them. What they call an ERK, E-R-K. He's just a working bot. A body that works, do whatever you want him to do. So finally we got to go to our gunning class. And one thing they didn't tell us of all the things they did was that the people graduating with the highest marks would graduate as pilot officers. The other half would graduate as sergeants. The difference being $2 a day.
Oh, yeah.
Sergeant got $3 a day. If you join a straight airman, he got $1.35. So I finished the course, and while I didn't pay much attention to the study for technical stuff. I was good with guns. I set records with a machine gun.
Yeah.
And I helped a friend of mine get through the course because he got hair check everywhere and went up and he couldn't stand fighting the gun, so I fired him for him. And he graduated, but he was a mental type too. He had good paper marks. So he graduated as a pilot officer. And over in England, I ran into him at Bournemouth and I said, hi, Vince. And he said, you have to call. You have to salute me now. I just thought to myself, you son of a bitch. I had to walk by him. But he was killed on his third trip.
Oh,
he should never become a gunner.
Yeah.
He wasn't for it. But anyway, graduated. I graduated as a pilot sergeant. Went through flight sergeants, warrant officer, pilot officer, and flying officer. That's why after I ended the war, I went back in again. I ended as a captain and with a recommendation for squadron leader. But I quit. That was enough. And during the war, we flew. The standard was you fly 6 weeks and you got a week off. And most of the time, the guys went to London. I traveled the country and tried to pick up some knowledge of what England was like, the Cotswold Forest and whatnot. And Scotland, I went there twice. My dad woke me up. He was under my bunk. And he was there to take me up to Scotland to meet his brother and sister and an uncle. And we got up there and we became friends because my dad and I weren't close. If something went wrong around the house, I got the blame for it. My younger brother, he was okay. But I got help for it. And but he came out of that on that trip. That's a good chapter in my book, tells you a lot.
Yeah.
And I went down to London a few times. I went down to Bournemouth. I took a tour on a boat up the Thames River. saw a lot of places we read about in history and whatnot. And I had a godmother who got me a chum's book. It was about that thick. It was all story of British. Had big letters, you could read it easy. And that's all I did for Christmas Day. I started on that until I was finished. But they told about all kinds of places in England, and I went to see them. Having read about them,
yeah.
I went to see them. And that was quite interesting, very interesting. I danced all the time. I was going to call my book I'm working on How I Danced My Way Through the Airport, Through the War, but it didn't fit. That book had been good. It's called The Odd Bod Who Beat the Odds. The Odd Bod was a spare gunner, or a spare anybody. He was the odd one. And we had collisions. Getting into the airports, we had three train collisions, three train wrecks from Vancouver to Edmonton. I've had three boats sunk under me. I've had three cars crashes. I've had three airplane crashes, a mid-air collision. And several times, I was asked to fly with somebody, with Commander Wilson. He came to me, and he had three more trips to do. And he said, Lucky, he said, I'll give you £100, or $500 at the time, to fly three trips with me, my last three. I said, what's wrong with your gunner? He said, nothing, but everybody knows, you come back. You always come back, no matter what happens up there. You come back on one wing one day. Christ, he says, you're lucky, you have to make it come. So I said, well, that's a hell of an indictment of your own gunner, and I don't have to fly with you, and I'm not going to. And he shot down that slider.
Oh, yeah.
That happened three times.
Three different times?
The only time I was offered money to do it, but three times I was assigned to the private guys, and at the last minute, I come with a gunner on a bicycle, the one I killed to catch the airplane before it took off. We were waiting around, talking on the ground, we were waiting for takeoff time. And he arrived, puffing up, and I said, the skipper, yours or me? He said, I'll take mine. And they didn't come back. Three times.
Wow.
But I had a guardian angel of a guy, because it's no question about it.
Sounds like
I'm
it.
Still going to be married three times, and I'm unlucky. But,
right on. So,
But that picture there, the only one of its kind, it tells you how there's 700 bombers there, but there's 100 in the picture. So multiply that by 7, and you're all in the dark. And you knew you were still with the bomber stream when you're flying along, and I go, whoop! You just passed by somebody's tail end and got the prop horse from the props. And that was, as long as you were getting that, you were on the track. But when you didn't, like our first mission, they just faded away, and we were all by ourselves. We went down the Nuremberg by ourselves, and then when we realized where we were, the compasses went out. What do you do? Eric went back to Paris and navigated back to check out the master compass. He went down there, but he couldn't get his oxygen tube plugged in right in the dark. And he passed out, so they sent the engineer down, and he passed out. Well, the operator went next, but he took a walkie bottle, portable one, with him, and he found them, put them online, and got them fixed up. And by the time Eric had enough savvy and he said to do anything, we were approaching Nuremberg. Because at the first star shot he took, he said, we're heading into Nuremberg. And he turned on, and he said, Moon, get the hell out of here. And we knew there was a big town somewhere, because we were picking up a lot of flak. We only went up there. And we looked up to the port side, and with a big bright light away up the north, and that was Berlin burning. And the skipper said, well, here we go. And he turned to the engineer and says, you don't have enough petrol to get there and back to England. You're going to have to go right now. We just have enough gas. So we flew back by the stars, so we had to guide us. And we stumbled over a castle in the south of the River Valley, which was a deadly place. Hundreds of thousands of 88mm guns on the aircraft gun they had.
Oh, yeah.
When they opened up, it was just the whole sky was boom, 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 boom. So passed over water several times, and we thought it was hitting the channel, but maybe it was a wash, we don't know. But finally we hollered out, "Darky, Darky," which was a code word signal if you're lost, and somebody will answer you, and they'll take a radar bearing where you turn on some IFF identification friendly program switch, and throw them on the ground who it was. So we did that, and they gave us a steer for somewhere, I think it was, I've forgotten right now. And we landed, turned off the runway. We went 40 feet off the runway, and all the engines went for 30 yards.